Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 66, Pundraka, the False Vasudeva, text number 2. Svam Vasudevo Bhagavan. Avatino jagatpati iti prastabito bhalhe mena atmana matutam tvam vasudevo bhagavan avatino jagatpati iti prasto vito bhale mena atmanam hachutam tvam vasudevo bhagavan avartino jagatpati iti prasto vito bhale iti prasto vito Minaratmana Machutam Vasudeva Bhagavan, the Supreme Lord, Parvatina, descended in Jagat of the universe, Pati, the Master, Iti, thus, Prastobitaha, emboldened with flattery, Balai, by childish men, Mene, he imagined Atmanam, himself, Achutam, the infallible Lord. Translation: Pundraka was emboldened by the flattery of childish men, who told him, "You are Vasudeva, the Supreme Lord and Master of the universe, who have now descended to earth." Thus he imagined himself to be the infallible personality of Godhead. Translation responsibly. Pundraka was emboldened by the flattery of childish men, who told him, "You are Vasudeva, the Supreme Lord and Master of the universe, who have now descended to earth." Thus he imagined himself to be the infallible personality of Godhead. Purport: Pundraka foolishly accepted the flattery of ignorant persons. So there's one verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the second canto where Sukadeva Goswami says that men who are like dogs, hogs, camels and asses, they praise foolish persons. They offer praise to foolish people. So this is a similar case here. We see even in the time of Lord Krishna, right up until the present day, and even previously, foolish people flatter other very foolish people. And as we see here with Pundraka, that he is so childish, he's accepting the flattery of childish men, and he's imagining himself that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is This is actually very common in this age, in the age of Kali. And there was actually another, there was a, I think his name is King Arhat, who's mentioned in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he also took advantage of this age of Kali, because a lot of people, they can recognize an opportunity for themselves, and they take full advantage of that. That's, you know, the mentality of people who want to make a profit, or, you know, who are looking for some personal benefit. So sometimes, you know, those who want to take advantage of this age, they can quite easily see that people are quite foolish when it comes to spiritual matters. You know, you can say anything in this day and age. You know, everyone takes something. Oh, you know, last weekend, you know, we went to the waterfall. It was so spiritual. Or, you know, I was watching a documentary on rappers, you know, and they feel that is spiritual, because it just, you know, it's natural. People take something as, if something is natural, they take that as spiritual. Or sometimes, if something is unnatural, they will take that as spiritual. People, in this day and age, people don't know. They're very much, very foolish. And you can pretty much put anything over them. Oh, this is spiritual. And they will accept. Oh, yes, it's, that sounds right to me. Like that. So, there was one king named King Arhat, and he took advantage of this age of Kali. And he imitated Lord Rishabhdev. So Lord Rishabhdev, as you know, he was an Avaduta, a Paramahamsa, and you know, he was completely self-satisfied, which meant that he never ever, you know, he didn't really care. He didn't take notice of his material situation. He was always absorbed on the spiritual platform within. So, you know, in that way, like other avadutas, they sometimes go about naked. You know, they don't bother to clothe themselves. You know, if food comes their way, they will eat something. If it doesn't come their way, they just go without. They may not wash themselves like that. So Srila Prabhupada actually points out that although there are many, when Srila Prabhupada went to America, of course, it was in the middle of the huge hippie epidemic. And he pointed out in the fifth canto that although there are many different types, many different groups of hippies, all of them are actually coming from this King Arhat, who was an imitation of Lord Rishabhdev. So we see this with the you know, with the hippie culture, that some of them had sort of, you know, gone to India and noticed some of the so-called sadhus and babajis who were still imitating, you know, persons like this King Arhat and Sukadeva Goswami, and, you know, other paramahamsas, avadutas, who would, you know, walk around naked and, you know, seem to be completely oblivious to their, you know, external surroundings. But of course, so we saw that you know, therefore, many hippies, they would not take a bath, you know, they would not wash, and, you know, they thought that living as the animals do, is spiritual, because you know nature to them was something spiritual, and any attempts at civilization, you know, cities, everything like that, everything that man attempted to do as far as being civilized was unnatural. But the animals, they were natural and therefore they were spiritual. So they behaved in many ways like animals. Of course, so they tried to imitate also personalities like King Rishabhdev. Of course, what they didn't take into consideration that Lord Rishabhdev didn't smell like a hippie. In fact, it said that Lord Rishabhdev, when he would pass stool and urine, it would actually make the atmosphere for miles and miles around fragrant, like roses. And Srila Prabhupada sort of once made some comment, someone asked something about, you know, how do you know when you achieve perfection, something like that. And he said, you know, when your stool smells like roses, you know that you know, you've reached that stage of perfection. There's some comment like that. So, you know, there are many imitators. They, of course, they also didn't follow Lord Rishabhdev's instructions. So, you know, imitation doesn't lead to perfection. Sometimes people, they imitate, they're absorbed in the very lower modes of ignorance and passion, and their mentality is not really far above, you know, animalistic society. But personalities like Rishabhdev and Sukadeva Goswami, although they were self-satisfied, they were absorbed on a very high transcendental level, you know, in their consciousness. And also, what is very interesting is that those self-satisfied personalities were also attracted to hearing and chanting about the activities and the glories and the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, especially Lord Sri Krishna. In the Bhagavad Gita, so sometimes people misinterpret in the Bhagavad Gita, there's that one verse which says that, you know, those who are self-satisfied, they're enjoying the bliss within, they have nothing to do. For them there are no rules and regulations. So people take up, you know, they will select a particular verse out of the Bhagavad Gita, or they may select, you know, one particular verse out of somewhere in the Vedas, and they will say, I am following the Bhagavad Gita. No, I am following the Vedas. It's like the, it's the philosophy of the half a hen. That, you know, I like the back part of the hen because it gives me the eggs. But I don't want the front part of the hen because I have to feed it. So, you know, people who follow the Vedas like that, that, you know, I like this, I like that verse in the Bhagavad Gita where, you know, I have nothing to do. There are no rules and regulations for me. I like that one. But I'm not interested in all the others, you know, where Krishna says, surrender unto me, and, you know, do not give up acts of charity, sacrifice and penance or what have you. And to, you know, and that actually the great souls, they're always engaged in, as it says in the Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter, text number 13, I think, that actually the Mahatmas, or Mahajans, they're not deluded by the external energy, and they're always constantly engaged in devotional service. So they, you know, people take one verse of the Bhagavad Gita that I am self-satisfied, I have nothing to do, there are no rules and regulations for me, and I am completely free from any reaction. And, you know, they take other verses and, you know, such as in the Vedic literature, you know, Aham Brahmasmi, or, you know, Tattvamasi, right, that you are Brahman. So they'll take the R. So, you know, in the Vedas, it says that I am Brahman. So, as Srila Prabhupada pointed out, actually, pretty much the hippie movement was influenced by this Mayavadi influence that was originally coming from King Arhat. So, underlying this sense of, you know, looking for some spiritual path, they very quickly adopted this path where I have no rules and regulations to follow, and this is spiritual, and this will lead me to the realization that I am spirit, Brahman, that I am God. At that, so there was an underlying, you know, this will lead me to perfection. So, but actually, you know, when the Vedas give such verses as Tattvamasi, you are Brahman, the Vedas give two types of instruction, two types of instructions in order to understand our spiritual nature. In describing us, the living entity, as Brahman, sometimes the Vedas give one type of instruction. They point towards the Supreme, who is also Brahman, and say, you're like that. So you are one with the Lord because you both share this spiritual quality. Jiva Goswami gives an example that it's like if someone was in a dark cave and they had never really been out in the sunlight and they wanted to know, well, what is the sun like? So another person who has actually seen the sun, they may point to a few rays of sunlight filtering into the cave and point to that and say, that is coming from the sun. This is just a little sample of, you know, the effulgence of the sun. So it gives you some clue that the sunshine is very much like the sun, except on a grander scale. So, you know, when the Vedas are pointing, you are Brahman, they're going like that. You are, yes, you are one. You know, you are like the Supreme Brahman because you have the same spiritual qualities in that you are both conscious. And you are eternal. But another set of instructions which the Vedas give, which you know, most people tend to ignore, is where the Vedas then give as many instructions, if not more, that you are also different from Brahman, in that the Supreme Brahman is the maintainer, is a single personality who is the maintainer of all living entities and the maintainer of all material and spiritual creations, and all others are, you know, tiny in size, and they are being maintained, and that makes up all the other living entities. So they're also Brahman, but there is a difference between the tiny, infinitesimal spiritual spark, which is a little particle of the energy of the Supreme Brahman, and the Supreme Brahman, which is omnipotence, omnipresence, omniscience. So the Vedas, you know, give those two different types of instructions. But people don't want to hear the second set. They just want to hear the first set. Oh, I am Brahman. I am that. I am the Supreme. Like that. So, and they also, people do this with the Bhagavad Gita. So there was a movement back in the 80s, I don't know if they still exist, Transcendental Meditation, TM, we should call them. And many of their followers, they used to learn the Bhagavad Gita, but their so-called guru only gave them the first six chapters. And Many of them didn't know that there are 18 chapters in the Bhagavad Gita. They understood, you know, here's the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. So they understood 6 chapters. Of course, as we know, you know, the last 12 chapters of the Bhagavad Gita are very, very important, where, you know, Krishna really delineates, you know, his supreme position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, you know, in this way, you know, people are cheated. And so people take, they take, you know, a little fraction of some teachings, something that suits themselves, or they will imitate, you know, great personalities. They will imitate certain parts that suit them and just leave the rest. For instance, in the case of Sukadeva Goswami, we see that, you know, people may like to, you know, walk around just as the hippies do. They like to walk around naked and, you know, they grow their hair long and, you know, things like that. But they don't follow the other part of, Sukadeva Goswami, because Sukadeva Goswami was actually self-satisfied. So although they're imitating, they're actually not self-satisfied. They're trying to give the appearance that I am completely self-satisfied, but as we know, you know, they were very, very much like, you know, everyone in this world, completely addicted and slaves to the bodily demands. Completely addicted to illicit sex, completely addicted to intoxication, completely addicted to so many different, you know, anger and greed and lust. Completely addicted. They were not self-satisfied beyond, you know, any bodily demands or, you know, mental demands. They were completely addicted to these things. But they made some imitation that, yes, I am, you know, above these things. You know, I am going around naked and I am, you know, completely free and liberated. Like this. So, you know, even in imitation of Sukadeva Goswami's self-realized, self-satisfied status, you know, a very, very poor imitation. But what to speak of the fact that Sukadeva Goswami, who was completely self-satisfied, self-realized, still he was attracted to engage in the devotional service of the Lord. Fully, completely. Completely immersed. So we see that Sukadeva Goswami, when he was within the womb of his mother, he was completely Brahman realized. And he was absorbed in the bliss of Brahman realization. And he actually didn't want to come out of the womb because he was so apprehensive that if he would take birth, that, you know, the material energy would immediately captivate him. And so he stayed within the womb of his mother for 16 years and he wouldn't come out. So actually his father, he wanted to encourage his son towards the devotional service of the Lord. He sent for Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna actually came and from Dwarka and said to Sukadeva Goswami that, if you take birth, come out of the womb, I will protect you. I will promise you that, you know, I will give you complete protection from Maya, from the material energy. And so Sukadeva Goswami, he took birth and then he immediately left. And then you have that verse in the Bhagavatam that, you know, his father was crying out, Sukha, Sukha, like this, and Sukadeva just went off into the forest where he was living as a completely, you know, completely aloof from the body and the mind. Just completely absorbed in self-realization. And as you know, there are those famous verses in the Bhagavatam where Sukadeva Goswami explains that, You know, that are there not, you know, is there not water in the rivers, and, you know, are there not fruit on the trees, and, you know, are there not old clothes lying on the ground? So, you know, Sukadeva Goswami would sometimes, you know, just, he would just wander around and, you know, all the he would make no real endeavour for his bodily maintenance, and whatever, you know, was available by, you know, the grace of the Lord, he would accept that. But his father, who actually, Srila Vyasadeva, had compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam, and he wanted to teach Sukadeva Goswami the Bhagavatam because he knew that Sukadeva Goswami would be the best disciple, not just because he was his son, but because he was completely above all material motivation. Srila Vyasadeva, he wanted to pass on the Bhagavatam to someone that would actually, who was so unmotivated, that they would preach the pure message of the Bhagavatam without distorting its message for some, you know, material gain, in this way cheating both the speaker and the hearer. We see that with, you know, these days there are the Bhagavat Saptaha, where, you know, people recite Srimad Bhagavatam for 7 days. And the speaker, it is their profession. They don't follow the principles of the Bhagavatam. They don't even believe in the principles of the Bhagavatam, and they're really just earning, you know, some maintenance for their family and for themselves. And, you know, the hearers, those who are coming along also, they hear the Bhagavatam thinking that this is some material pious activity. If I hear the Bhagavatam, you know, I will get some... you know, my family will not be diseased, and, you know, I will, you know, I will get more money, and, you know, so they hear like this, and I will become free from some sinful reactions and what have you. So it is a real karma kandiya type materialistic, you know, pursuit on their behalf. So there's some benefit, no doubt, because it's a Srimad Bhagavatam. But that sort of recitation of the Bhagavatam doesn't really, you know, change the hearts of either the speaker or the audience, and therefore you see that the speaker goes away and they just go back to their material life. They've done their 7 day stint, and, you know, the people, they just go back to their material life, and nothing has, their hearts have not changed. In fact, sometimes, because those professional Bhagavatam readers, in order to attract a large audience, they sometimes concentrate or, you know, skip over many cantos of the Bhagavatam, and they go straight to Krishna's Rasa Leela, because they know that, you know, they will get bigger crowds and people will pay them more money, and in that way, you know, it would be very, very profitable. But of course, by, you know, jumping to this most confidential part of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the danger is that they are, you know, presenting Krishna like an ordinary person. That is the danger, without going through the philosophy of Srimad Bhagavatam properly. And one hears Krishna's intimate pastimes with the gopis, one thinks, well, he is just an ordinary person like me, just simply a lusty person like I am. And yet, if he is, you know, revered as God and worshipped, therefore, through my sex life, I can also become godly and worshipable. Let me also have gopis, and, you know, we will do some rasa dancing. So, you know, people, as a result, people imitate Krishna. You know, so they go and they hear Bhagavat Saptaha, and the result is they go away thinking, let us imitate, just like here, Pundraka, you know. Let me imitate Krishna. I am God. So if anything, it actually causes so much trouble, so much difficulty, because that is not the religious principles being taught in the Srimad Bhagavatam or the Bhagavad Gita or any Vedic literature. That we should, you know, the Vedic literature is not teaching us, let us imitate God, his most confidential activities, let us pretend we're God, forget all other instructions from the Supreme Lord, forget all other religious principles, and we'll just imitate, you know, the Supreme Lord, even though that's not even possible. And even though we're not really even imitating God, because what we're doing is nothing like what he did at all. Because, you know, the Supreme Lord did not engage in illicit sexual activities, nor does he ever. The Supreme Lord, you know, in his rasa dance, was engaged in the pure loving affairs with his own internal spiritual pleasure potency, which has nothing to do with mundane sex life in this material world. So, Srila Vyasadeva, you know, he wanted that, you know, because Sukadeva Goswami is beyond, you know, any material motivations, any material influences, I want him to, you know, be the student, the first student of Srimad Bhagavatam, because then he can give it as it is for the benefit of the whole world. So he actually, Srila Vyasadeva, he sent some of his disciples, and they would go into the forest and collecting wood and different things like that. And when they would, you know, be near Sukadeva Goswami, they would recite certain specific verses, which are like a synopsis of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And when Sukadeva Goswami heard this, then he was attracted. He was immediately attracted. And therefore he went back to Srila Vyasadeva, and he wanted to learn from him the full Srimad Bhagavatam. And so Srila Vyasadeva then taught him the full Srimad Bhagavatam in all its 18,000 verses, beginning from the very first verse, not jumping, skipping straight to the Rasa Leela, but beginning from the very first verse right through and teaching, you know, right to the last canto, like that. Everything step by step, the complete science of God. And Srila Sukadeva Goswami, he also, when he, you know, then taught the Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikit Maharaj, he did the same thing, you know. And that is the way that Srimad Bhagavatam actually has to be learned. From the very first verses, you know, there are 10 subject matters in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and if we understand those 10 subject matters, gradually we understand how Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he is the shelter for all other truths. And yet he is completely the independent Supreme Lord, and who engages in his own spiritual pastimes in the spiritual world. So in this way, people don't actually imitate, you know, that part of Sukadeva Goswami. He's let us walk around naked like hippies, you know. But Sukadeva Goswami, you know, was absorbed in Srimad Bhagavatam and taught the Srimad Bhagavatam. Let us have nothing to do with that. Why? Because, you know, what are we really wanting to do? We don't want to serve God, we just want to have illicit sex. Right? The whole reason we want to walk around naked is because we can see each other naked and, you know, have you know, live a promiscuous life. We don't really want to be like Sukadeva Goswami and become absorbed in devotional service. So people are very much motivated in their imitation. And you see that actually, you know, there was circumstances with in the time Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, where one Bishakishain, and he also claimed that he was the Supreme Lord. He claimed that he was Vishnu, he had his Brahma and he had his Shiva. They were that sort of imitations. He was actually a very powerful yogi, and he was claiming to be the Supreme Lord, and therefore, you know, he was, you know, he was claiming that he would actually destroy all the Westerners, including the King of England. He would kill them all because they were offenders, and throw everyone, all the rascals out of India, and like this, you know. And then he would revive, you know, Hindu Dharma and Vedic religion. And so people were, you know, thinking, because he was actually a yogi, great yogi with, well, not a great yogi, but he was a yogi with very powerful mystic powers. And people were very fearful of him, that, you know, he demanded certain things from the villagers. And so they would, you know, they would even send their wives and their daughters to engage in Rasa Leela with this yogi. Like that. And at one stage, when, you know, some of the more elevated persons within those villages, when their the females from their family had been seduced, they complained very strongly to, of course, at that stage the British government was ruling, and they complained, and the British understood that this is a very sensitive situation. Here is a person claiming to be God, and he has thousands of followers, all accepting that he is the Supreme Lord. And they actually gave the task to Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur. Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur at that stage was a leading magistrate, and he was also in charge of the Jagannath temple. And while he was there, he'd actually, kicked out a lot of malpractices that were actually going on, even in the Jagannath temple. And it was Bhaktivinoda Kaur who had, you know, established the very strict standard of worship for Lord Jagannath. That was established by Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, because it actually declined. And so he was well known for, you know, his very strong, pure stance on religious principles. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, so he went there to see this yogi, and when he got there, he had certain constables, and there was a superintendent of the district and the chief of police, and they stayed a little bit back. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur went into this village, and when he got there, the yogi said, "I know who you are, Babu." And he immediately told him, you know, "I know you are Bhaktivinoda Kaur, and this is your history, and this is what you do." And he told him everything about it. And then he had a leaf, and everything he just said was already written down on this leaf, you know, so he was showing his mystic potency, so he passes it. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, you know, he understood, and this is the nature of a devotee, because we have these pure teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam from Sukadeva Goswami, from Srila Vyasadeva, the author of all Vedic literature, and here Srimad Bhagavatam is the essence, the cream, the essential teachings of all Vedic literature, written by the author of all Vedic literature. Because we have that, therefore devotees can immediately understand, you know, what is cheating and what is, you know, religion and what is not. In the very second, you know, sloka of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it says, you know, all cheating processes of religion immediately kicked out. Every single sloka of Srimad Bhagavatam is this spotlessly pure, you know, message of pure love of God, pure religious principles. So He, you know, Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, he understood, yes, you may be a, you know, great yogi, but, you know, that is all you are. He said, but anyway, you know, why don't you come down to, you know, Jagannath Puri, because the Lord is there as, you know, Lord Jagannath, and, you know, you will enjoy that pilgrimage. So immediately he said that. The yogi said, "Oh, Jagannath is just a block of wood." So, yeah, immediately, Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, he understood, "You rascal, you'll be punished." You know, And then the yogi saying, I am God. I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You must surrender to me, like this. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, he understood that this person must be punished, because he is claiming to be God, and he is, in the name of religion, he is basically just teaching everyone to, you know, this process of illicit sex and disregarding all, you know, proper scriptural injunctions and like this. So, you know, very, very serious. Because if such rascals, you know, we see in this story here that eventually Pundraka, who is imitating Krishna, what did Krishna do? Who knows? Huh? He cut his head off, yes. Sorry to, you know, jump at the end of the story there, but Krishna actually cut his head off. And because it is very serious, because from irreligious practices, what happens is you get unwanted children. Krishna, Arjuna, you know, and Krishna discussed this in the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita. And from unwanted children, there's so much problems in the world. So, you know, if we trace out, you know, in our society, we look at our society, so much trouble, so much disturbance, individually, socially, nationally, internationally, because children, you know, are not born to in purified circumstances. In many cases, you know, they are born in unfortunate circumstances, and this is creating havoc throughout the entire world. So therefore we see that there is no peace, there is no, you know, and every avenue of life there is havoc. Economically, the whole world is in dire straits. You know, environmentally, there is havoc. Therefore we have bushfires, we have floods, we have unnatural weather conditions. There is scarcity. The rivers are drying up. The animals are suffering. The humans are suffering. You know, politically, there is war everywhere, raging. You know, this is a direct result of irreligious practices. So, you know, one may think, oh, well, Krishna cut off his head, you know, because he was imitating God. But Krishna prevented the very existence that we have now. He didn't want that. Krishna didn't want that everyone should live like we're living now. Better cut off his head, someone who's teaching, you know, irreligious practices. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura also. You know, better arrest this person, put him into jail. Otherwise everyone will suffer. It's not just the insult. It's you know, there is definite damage that these rascals who teach false religious principles, especially when they claim to be God, claim everyone can be God, that is the worst, because that means anyone can do whatever they want, and they just feel that they, you know, they are completely free from any sort of punishment, or, you know, they can act with impunity. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, he sent for, knowing that this person had to be arrested, he sent for the constables to bring back a cart, and he managed, you know, the yogi at first, you know, he didn't want to go, and actually he was so powerful that he became really angry, and flames started, you know, shooting from his hair, and then he became even more angry and flames started shooting from his eyes, and everyone was terrified. Oh, you know, Bhaktivinoda Thakura has offended God. You know, we're all going to die, like this. You know, everyone was terrified. And people went running here and there. But Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, he wasn't, you know, he understood you may be a very powerful yogi, but you are not God. You know, he wasn't, you know, he was, you know, for the average person, you see, you know, flames coming from someone's eyes. Or, you know, these days, if someone can do a little magic jugglery, even a sleight of hand, oh, he's God. You know, someone just has to say God, oh, he's God, that's enough for me. He's, you know, he said it and some other fool said it, that's two of them, he must be God. You know, you know? Someone has a dream, they wake up. you know, I am God. I remember one time I was, before as a devotee, I read a book on impersonalism, how we are non-different from the super soul. And I actually once had a dream after reading that book. I had a dream that I was sitting on the beach, and I was sitting in a bath, having a bath on the beach. It was a little unusual anyway. It was like a little shower thing coming over. It was a beautiful sunny day, but I was looking out at the sun, and I was just feeling really warm and comfortable in this bath. And the sun slowly went down in the sky, and I thought, oh, gee, you know, wouldn't it be nice, you know, if I could make the sun rise again? Because, you know, and this sort of impersonal, you know, book that I was reading had influenced me. And in my dreams, the sun rose up in the sky. And I thought, gee, maybe I am God, you know, maybe this book is true. You know, like that. So some dream, and I thought, you know, maybe there's something to this book. And then I thought, that's interesting. And then in my dream, I made the sun go up and sun go down. Sometimes, you know, it doesn't take much to convince someone, you know, of something very foolish. So anyway, Bhishila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, like, you know, the acharyas and the devotees, they're fixed. You know, even with such a powerful display, you know, no, you are not God. You know, you don't have any of the symptoms manifested, you know, according to Shastra. You know, there is a time they come, the place they come, their mother, the father, you know, their activities, everything, the description of their form, everything is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. So, you know, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura somehow convinced him to get onto this cart. And this Vishakishan, he was saying, well, the only reason I'm coming with you is because I want to preserve the word of my devotee. You have said I should come, and so, you know, I will go with you. Otherwise, you know. So anyway, he took him back to Puri, and there was a court case, and the whole time this yogi was fasting. So the court case lasted about... I think there was about 21 days or something before the court case, and then the court case lasted 18 days. Anyway, the whole time this yogi was fasting, he was trying to build up his yogic powers, and he was saying to, you know, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura that, you know, don't you go ahead with this. If you go ahead with this, you know, there will be disaster. When you go to your home today, you see what will happen. And on about the second or third day, when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura went home, his second daughter had actually been afflicted with this disease, which, you know, was literally going to threaten to kill her. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura's wife, I think her name is Bhagavati, she was saying, you know, stop, we must stop, you know, we'll all be killed. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura said, let us all die, but this rascal must be punished. You know? So anyway, then, you know, later on, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura, you know, the yogi was threatening, I will kill you. And he came down with a very severe pain in the right part of his chest, which, you know, just literally was threatening to kill him. And on the last day of the court case, they literally sort of had to carry Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura into the court, and, you know, he gave his verdict that, you know, because of your crimes against the government, because he was threatening to kill the king, you know, destroy the establishment, he gave him 18 months in jail. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura ordered that his hair be cut off, because but no one actually would come forward to do that because they were so scared. And so Srila Prabhupada says that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura himself took up scissors and cut the hair, and as soon as he did that, the yogi just fell in a heap. He just lost all his power, because yogis, they keep their yogic power in their hair. As soon as he cut off all his hair, he just fell in a heap. Anyway, after about 3 months, that so-called imitation God, he took poison and died in jail. So this is actually the duty, you know, of the devotees, is that we should always be alert. Srila Prabhupada actually says that this ISKCON, we are declaring war on those imitation gods and imitation gurus. And actually on different occasions where different disciples mentioned about, you know, imitators like this and Sai Baba and this one, someone was an incarnation of Christ and someone was an imitation of this and that. The disciples would suggest it, they would say, well, Krishna cut the head off Kundraka, and Srila Prabhupada would say, yes, that is a fit punishment. But actually, in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Prabhupada actually says that, you know, we do not kill people in this age of Kali. You know, so make that point very, very clear. We're not cutting people's head off, we're not harming people physically in any way. But he says, how do we kill them? We kill their demoniac mentality by preaching very, very strongly according to Shastra. That's how we do it. And, you know, that is, as devotees, we should always be very alert and very strong, you know, to preach very strongly and, you know, curb this imitation gods, imitation gurus, because they are causing unlimited havoc in the world by, you know, propagating irreligious principles. So I'll just leave it there. Anyone has any questions or comments?